I'm a consultant in the corporate world, and we did this type of process with a group that could not get along together, a department of scientists, chemists, who could not get along. And we had them talk about what they liked about each other individually and what they disliked and the lessons they learned, and it changed the dynamic. It was painful. It was a two-day process with them in a group, which was scientists who are introverts who do not like to talk in groups.
You know the difference between an introverted and an extroverted scientist,
right?
Right. Yeah, because the extrovert will be looking at your feet exactly when they're talking to you. The introvert's looking at his or her feet. That's how you tell them apart. So, thank you for adding that. Talk about ways my life is better because of knowing this person. If I'm doing my writing, I write about how I think my nephew was had a better life because of having me in his life. And then I would write about on another day how I thought my life was better from knowing my nephew. He only lived 10 years, or not quite 10 years. And in going through that, facing the pain and the fear and the sadness inside myself, it freed me up to help all kinds of people. In my own family, my own sister, the mother of my nephew. Talk about the ways my life was changed. Talk about the ways I think another person's life was changed from having known me. Things I'm glad I did in the relationship. Things I'm glad that person did in the relationship. Things I wish I'd done. Things I wish I hadn't done. Things I wish they had done that they never did or would. Grieve. You know, your name again, Denise?
Denise.
So Denise might have a grief process to work through related to her brother, because her brother has decided to cut off contact, and it would be a really useful process if it were my sibling who had cut me off for me to get some papers out and say, I'm going to run through this list. Now, depending upon the intense or the duration and emotional connection in the relationship, the termination process might take an afternoon. You know, if it's somebody that I worked with for 6 months or a year and I was never really that close with them, and it's still a very useful thing to do. But if it's someone that I went to school with for 4 years, I might be at the process for weeks. If I'm actively working the process, I'm going to schedule some time to either think about or... So let's say I'm not into journaling. How would I use this process? She hates it about me, but Mary Patrice is going to hear me talk. Mary Patrice, I need to talk. I got to tell you about Larry. And I would find a friend who will listen, and I will have the piece of paper, and I will just talk about, here's what I really think I learned from having this relationship with Larry in my life. Mary Patrice might be saying, yeah, I got to go. I say, okay, I'll be with you next Wednesday, and we'll talk more about it. Relationship can be a powerful way to express, and if you have a tool like this, and you're willing to use it, you can clear out the stuff that you thought would never leave you. You can clear out and free yourself from stuff that you thought defined your life in pain, sadness, fear, confusion, hurt, loneliness.
Record it for yourself.
Excellent idea. You can record it for yourself. You can write it in a letter. Some people don't like to journal, but if I tell them, write Larry a letter. They can write Larry a letter, scathing letter, loving letter, whatever. They may never want to send it, and that's okay. It's not for Larry that I do my grief work. It's for me. So there was a point in time where my grandmother, one of the biggest figures in my life, 100% Irish, fun, funny, a woman with style, a woman with humor and intelligence, and could drink college kids under the table and dance until 3 a.m. when my brother and I, as college students, are going, Graham, can we go home now? So she hits 89 years old. She's still living alone. She's still driving herself everywhere. She's still volunteering at church. She's still volunteering at the nursing home, the old folks' home, where she's pushing 55 and 60-year-olds around in the wheelchair. And she gets a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. So she's going to go quickly, but we know she's going. It's not like she just, you know, passed in her sleep. Well, I'm a young, brilliant graduate student who knows about this termination process. And I do my termination with my grandmother, which, you know, was a long process because she'd been in my life 36 years, 37 years, 38 years, something like that. And I think I had 3 or 4 pages. It was good stuff. I should have been a writer. So I had this with me, right? And I had to drive the 2 hours down to see her, and I had one kid as an infant in a car carrier, and the other one was like a 2-year-old on my lap. And I sat down, Graham was here, you can be my stooge. what do you call it? Prop, you can be my prop. So, and I sat down, had the kid in here and the kid here, and she's in her lazy boy, and my dad's sitting right there, my mom's right over here behind me, and I said, Graham, I just want you to know. She said, nope. So I got rid of a page. I said, okay, but Graham, I just want you to, nope. Okay, all right, I'm down to one page. So, but Graham, I just want to, nope. So I kind of threw the pages away, and I was, that's what I wanted to say. And I finally came out with, Graham, I just want you to know these two boys will know who their great-grandmother was. And I teared up. And I thought through everything that was on my 4 pages, and that's all I needed. And she had a little tear, and she smiled, and that was it. We're done. My termination work got done. She didn't want any part of it. That's okay. It's okay. It's her right, you know. It's her life. It's her end-of-life process. I offer that to you as an example of how it's all an inside job, and this tool can be effective whether the person died 2 minutes ago, 20 years ago, moved away 5 years ago or 20 years ago and doesn't want to talk to you. I can still do my work. And this tool and these categories have been phenomenally useful for me to stir up the stuff that I don't want to look at. Questions? Comments? Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. So, do you have an example in mind? I have one. You want an example? All right. I had a very, very difficult time in graduate school. I had no money, had to work 3 and 4 jobs at a time. It took me 9.5 years to get the degree. One of the part-time jobs I did through grad school was tutoring people with statistics, because I entered statistics thinking the thing that will keep me from being a psychologist is the math and the statistics. So my first year, I read and studied. I studied the footnotes. I found the answers to problems that were only in the footnotes in the book, and people were going, ooh. And they thought it was because I was smart, and it was because I was scared to death that I wasn't going to be smart enough. So I learned statistics and research so well that that was my part-time job for the next 9 years. Comes time to do a dissertation, and I'd spent 8 years tutoring people through their cumulative exams, their state licensing, their master's theses, their dissertations. I would do the statistics and research design for other people's dissertations, and they would pass and get all this good stuff. They got their license because I tutored them on how to take the stats and research design for license. Comes time to do a dissertation. What would I do a dissertation on? I can't figure it out. I can't. All of a sudden, one day, I'm driving home from tutoring somebody. I said, I'll do a dissertation on statistics and research design. Pfft, who would? Yeah, I'm a swimmer. I'm just going to drop my pants and slide in the ice. Right? It's going to be so easy, right? So I find a committee. They say it's great. Everything goes. We're this. And then we get to the oral defense. And I'm told for 9.5 years, I'm told, Everything about this process is when you successfully defend your oral defense of your dissertation, people walk up to you and say, congratulations, shake your hand and say, congratulations, Dr. Hayes. It's the first time you officially get called doctor. So I select the committee, two people who are supposed to know a lot about statistics and research design, and one person who was, you know, one of the deans of the school. I go through the whole process. The other thing I'm told is, we want you to succeed. And I go in there having been told, we won't even set up the date for your oral defense of your dissertation until we know you're ready. Okay, good. I got there an hour early. I'm talking to people. This one woman said to me, you're fine, relax. We don't need any changes. You're just fine, relax. Everything's good. No, Tim, you're too nervous. Go have a cup of coffee, relax. 25 minutes later, in the oral defense, that woman sat this far away from me, we're buddies, and she said to me, wow, you've got some serious problems here. Like, when you say research, you haven't even defined that. You got serious problems in this paper.
Welcome to academia.
I've done a lot of grief work about that. I've done a lot of processing about what I learned from her lying bold-faced to me. What I learned from one of my mentors, who was really good at statistics and research design, who sat across the table from me and let that happen and didn't interrupt it. They didn't pass me. They didn't shake my hand and call me Dr. Hayes. I had to go home. I had to face two kids who were dressed up to go to lunch. My wife all dressed up to go, and tears in my eyes. I cried all the way from the school to the house and said, I can't do this. I can't go to lunch. I didn't pass. I can't. There's an event, not any one person. I've done lots and lots of tapping and breathing and worksheets and going through catalogs of what was the lesson for me in this. What we passed out is a handout about one of the most useful tools I've learned for processing all this extra energy that comes up around thoughts that I hold on to. And it's called the emotional freedom technique, and it has to do with using knowledge of the body's acupuncture meridians and the breath to keep my breath moving and to breathe and focus on negative thoughts or physical sensations, aches or pains, strong negative emotions, and breathe and just tap and say, I release this and let it go. Even though I have this problem, I love and accept myself. Even though I have this problem, I know it's going to work out, even though I don't know how. Even though I have this problem, I love and accept and forgive myself. And I just breathe and I tap, or I massage the ends of my fingers, or I just massage over my eyebrows and under my eyes and above and below with the lips. And I tap and I breathe and I just say, this is going to move through me. I don't have to hold on to it. And I have had phenomenal success, not resolving issues with this, but spilling off the excess energy so that I can then take a breath and look more clearly with that balance of logic and emotion and do a process like the termination process, or write somebody a letter, or have a difficult conversation with somebody. And it's not written on here, but the gentleman that created this is Gary Craig, and he was in retirement when I got this. There's two websites on the bottom of this. I don't know anything about them. I leave them out of there. On there as a courtesy to this woman. She is in Ireland, and she sent me this, and she said, I love some of your articles about EFT, so here, take this and use it. So I never met her. I didn't really research her website. I just put the disclaimer out there. Gary Craig is back out of retirement, and his website, some of the best stuff you can get for free, is www.emofree.com. emofree.com. And another really good resource. So Gary Craig did this work, spent thousands of dollars learning about it, trying it, and finding out how well it worked. And he had this download that said, it doesn't have to be that complicated. So he created what's on this page and put it on the internet for free. His was a typed PDF, nowhere near as concise as this, 80 pages. And this woman and her friend, artist, constructed this, consolidating that. Then, not too many years ago, a gentleman by the name of Robert Smith, who studied this, got trained in this, used this a lot, and studied a lot of other therapy techniques, he got the download. You know what? I don't think it has to be as complicated as that page you're holding. And so he created a shorter system, and he's got hundreds of YouTube videos out there for free. So if you go to YouTube, not Google, but if you go to YouTube and you type in Robert Smith Faster EFT, those four words separated by a space, you'll get lots of short and not so short videos. And if you're having a grief process or an anxiety problem or a depression problem, and you go and you look at Robert Smith's tapping videos off of YouTube, look for the ones that show either the side or the back of Robert Smith's head, and you're looking face on with another person. Because those will be the one where Robert Smith is talking to them and tapping with them. And what Robert Smith's technique is he just taps over the eye, side of the eye, under the eye, on the collarbone spot, and then he just grabs the wrist. So he's got five places. One, two, three, four, five, rather than all of these. Now, this, I know people who really like some of the energy points that are on this tapping technique, and they don't like just doing the five from Robert Smith. I've also seen Robert Smith add several of these when people get stuck or their energy comes up real big. So, if you go looking at the YouTube videos, you would see Robert Smith, the back of his head or the side of his head, and you'll see me looking right at the camera, and you'll see him tap on my forehead, on the cheekbone, and then here, and then you see his hand disappear. It's not a mystery. All he's doing is grabbing my wrist. So you don't get to see a lot of that on those YouTube videos, but that's all that's happening. So when you see that, if you're going to tap along, you tap on yourself when he's tapping on the other person. You keep your breath moving, and then when his hand disappears, grab your wrist gently but firmly, squeeze it, and say whatever he says. Usually he's saying the word peace. I claim my peace. I allow my peace. And then he encourages people to think the most loving thoughts they have in their memory, the most loving images, and breathe into it. And when you do that with the tapping, you're activating a whole other energy system. Some call it the acupuncture meridian. Some say you're involving the chakras. Some say it's everything under the sun because everything's connected.
So is that where EMDR came from?
No, EMDR came from a woman named Francine Shapiro, who was a social worker and had some trauma going on in her life and was on a long walk, and she realized she was walking through a forest preserve, and she was kind of like scanning left and right, and she was like, she wasn't really paying attention where she was, but she got to the end of the forest preserve and she thought, wow, I'm not really as upset about that thing that was really bugging me. So she got some of her friends together and said, let's play with this. And that's why it's called EMDR. It's about eye movement. And so they would have people sit and look straight ahead, and the therapist would put his or her fingers in front of the person and say, hold your head steady and follow my fingers with your eyes. No. EMDR. This is how it started. It was just this. Pretty soon, they had to develop special braces for the therapist's elbows and shoulders for repetitive movement injuries. Because, and some people, I can't do this, I'm getting dizzy or it gives me a headache. And so they decided, let's look at why it might be so effective. And what they came up with is it's just alternating bilateral stimulation. The brain is divided in half. The right side of my brain feeds the left side of my body. The left side of my brain feeds the right side of my body. So if I stimulate, now we're into tapping. Now I have eye movement. Now I have literally had fabulous results at times with people before I invested in some of the more sophisticated equipment, and I would sit, have them close their eyes or open, doesn't matter, and I would sit as far away from them as I am from Dorothy, and I'd click pens, just regular pens. I'd click one and then the other, and they would just pay attention to the tone. And their attention would go from one side to the other, and that was enough to start the processing. what they're assuming it happens. And Francine wishes that she had caught it sooner or named it differently. When she realized what was happening, she said, I'm going to change the name and call it Accelerated Information Processing. She couldn't. It had already gone international. There was no way to get the cats back in the barn. It was out. And it became...
Would you say that again, please, what she thought she could name it later?
Accelerated.
Oh, okay.
Information Processing. Or something like that. She was playing with names and people said, no, you can't do it. It's already international. It rapidly became one of the most well-researched techniques for trauma resolution outside of wartime. And I would say now it's probably gotten the label of most studied trauma resolution technique.
I've also heard that it's been said that it's a shame buster. A shame buster, that's what I was told.
Meaning?
It busts shame. It takes, people who are very shame-based, that it actually breaks up the shame. It dissolves it.
Well, I would imagine that for anyone who's willing, it'll help me clean out the closet. It'll help me look at stuff I don't want to look at, very much like the breathing and tapping, very much like the shorter faster EFT, where I just keep saying, I release and let it go, I release it and let it go, it's safe to let it go, it's safe to let it go. I have to convince myself it's safe to go look past Jack Nicholson in the closet. This is where most people benefit from that community I was talking about. I would be willing to wager, and I'm not a betting person, but I would be willing to wager that the vast majority of people in this room have within them the strength and capacity to work through every issue in their life. And yet, not everybody in this room would have the willingness. What affects my willingness? All kinds of different things. Fear is going to be the biggest one for most of us. Denise, right? Worry about losing a loved one who won't come along to do their own personal work, and what if I do my work and she doesn't do hers and we get further and further from each other. Fear that it's going to overwhelm me if I go look and do my work. Lots of different reasons that I can use to hold myself back, and yet the vast majority of people I've ever encountered are far stronger than they understand, and the ones who come in to see me for therapy are, generally speaking, throw any kind of number you want on it, I'll probably agree with it, 10 times, 100 times stronger than the people who don't. And they see themselves as weaker, but they're coming to get help. And right there, they've demonstrated a strength that eludes everybody who refuses to get help or thinks they can tough it out themselves. Breath or two? Yes.
The tapping, only on one side.
No. It doesn't matter how you do it or when you do it or which side. And there are wonderful videos, lots of good stuff for free at Gary Craig's website. And there I know it's really solid. Everything I've seen Robert Smith do, also very solid. You can find all kinds of stuff. Nick Ortner, the International Tapping Summit, and some of it's good, some of it's mediocre, some of it's kind of off the mark. But the good news is you can't hurt yourself with it. If you're willing to release and let stuff go, you can say, I'm going to get myself some organic carrots and chew them with every chew, say I let it go. You've probably got a whole new therapy technique there, because you're probably going to work through your issues better than somebody who won't eat the carrots or do the tapping or whatever.
More subtly in a public meeting, you can cross your arms on your legs and just do it on your knees. And you'll see some of the professional tennis players do that at their break. It calms the heart rate and reduces anxiety.
And one of the, thank you for adding that, one of the shortcuts that I teach a class in this a couple times a year in Barrington, and I'm doing it right now, I'm giving myself an acupressure treatment. And all I have to do is roll my fingers or massage my fingers, because the acupuncture meridians have terminal points on each of the fingers on either side of the nail bed, right where the nail bed ends. So it's like energy coming in and going out on my fingertips, in through the body and out the toes. Well, as that's happening, it's got to go through my wrists. This is why people grab their wrist and say, I release and let go. So if I don't want to massage my fingertips because I got somebody in a staff meeting that knows what I'm doing and they made fun of me, I can just, you know, massage my wrist.
Or there's a meridian point in the center of your palm and you can just hold it.
You can't, essentially, you can't touch yourself and not be in touch with your energy system. So for all of these things that Jan's suggesting or I'm telling you about or they might tell you on the internet, if you have the willingness and you have the thought, I want my energy to flow and I'm willing to go through what happens because I know it's going to be better on the other side, you'll get benefit. And keeping the breath moving is at the core of effectiveness for all of these things. Please think in terms of your breath is the on-off switch for your body's emotional energy system. When you see someone get startled, they hold their breath. Why do they hold their breath? Because they began to feel something they didn't want to feel. We instinctively know holding the breath has an anesthetic quality. It shuts off and suppresses the energy which would flow that would process that emotion. It cuts me off from the feeling. What I have to decide for myself, and each of us has to decide, is, am I willing to put up with the cost long term of suppressing this energy that I don't want to feel and adding energy to it, hiding it in the only place in my life that I'm guaranteed to run into it again and again and again and again until I finally deal with it? Am I willing to pay that price just so I don't have to feel it right now? I'm offering, it's far better to just breathe and feel it. Let the stuff flow. And when you keep your breath moving in a moment, you will feel your emotions more intensely. And they will process rather than build up. And so the next time they come up, they may be very intense for quite a while. There was a lot of time after my nephew died where every kind of a thought, every time I had to deal with my sister, every time there was a reminder, there was a lot of stuff up. And I knew enough to keep my breath moving. And not too many years after he died, I learned some of these tapping things and added that. And I'm grateful beyond words for the improvement it's made in my life. Questions, comments, thoughts, reactions, answers? Does anybody? Yes.
These are all techniques that, you know, we can do with ourselves to help ourselves. And my question is, because I've been through a lot of intensive psychotherapy and all kinds of things, and one of the things that that's important for me, and I don't know if when you have a trauma, a person, me, or you're, the feeling of being alone is there, and oftentimes you are alone that you don't tell anybody. So you have these things that you don't ever tell anybody, this happened or that happened. And sometimes I see people that I've worked with, the biggest thing was not that they didn't have a tool, but that they couldn't tell anybody. You couldn't tell anybody that this happened. So when we're doing all this tapping and all of that, I see with most of the people that I deal with that sometimes they go through all this, it seems like it's all, you know, in a good place, but the act of actually telling a person, another human being, that they experience something helps them to let it go. Do you find that?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So if you look at the being able to talk about it. Now, there's two levels there. Am I unwilling to talk about it, or is the other person not wanting to let me share? But, you know, from this grief recovery method process, they talk about some of the most common misinformation. Like I mentioned earlier, time heals. Time doesn't heal. The application of effective tools over time facilitates healing. The body heals. The mind heals. So, one of the common misinformation things on this is grieve alone. Don't tell anybody what you're going through. No, it doesn't really work well. Community works better. One of the common misperceptions is you got to be strong. No, cry in front of your kids. What happens if I'm going through all of that? My kids know my friend Pat died 1 year. My dad died the next year. Well, prior to that, their mother's grandmother died in the year before Pat died. Then Pat died. Then the next year, not even a full year away, my dad dies. Then not even a full year beyond that, or just past a full year, their grandmother, my wife's mother, dies. And I'm like, okay, kids, let's go play ball. And they're like feeling all of this energy, and they're noticing the shifts in the adults, and they're seeing their mom, who can't get out of bed and whose face is redder than Trisha's shirt for days on end. And I'm trying to act like, oh, come on, suck it up, let's go, dry it up, let's move on. What does that tell them? What kind of messages might they get in their head? That if they're crying, something's wrong with them. They're weak, they're not strong like Dad. It's a crazy-making situation when people try to do it alone or try to be strong or try to not feel bad. Listen, if you feel bad, feel bad. Breathe and tap. The point of the breathing and tapping is not to put a smile on and charge off to work. I hope nobody misunderstands this. I hope people are getting... I'm saying stop. Open the closet, give yourself time to cry, and the tapping and breathing just helps ease it a little bit. It doesn't take away all the pain.
It moves the energy.
It moves the energy. It's like Hoover Dam doesn't let that stuff flow. But you knock the dam down and let that stuff flow, and it moves faster, and a lot gets cleared out. One of the common misperceptions is you need to replace the loss. Have another kid, get another pet. Processing the loss is far more important than finding one of those short-term energy-reducing behaviors. I think they call them STIRBs. Coffee, chocolate, get another pet, stay busy at work. All those things do is hide or reduce the negative impact in the moment, and they don't help process what you're hiding, by the way, in the only place in the universe where you're guaranteed to run into it again and again and again and again until you actually deal with it. And that's your own mind-body-energy system. I can never run away from the stuff I've thrown in the closet. That's the big myth. And until I met Pat, I didn't know I was dragging it with me everywhere I went. I didn't know I was creating the doom dragon monster and then bringing it with me everywhere I went. Thanks for sharing that. It's absolutely true. And it comes back to the first point you made, which is sometimes if you find something and I mean, he doesn't have hair, but he's kind of smart and he stand up talking and it sounded like worth trying. So you take it home and try it and you've got people who say, no, that's bad, that's wrong. It might be an upstream course for you to try something new that isn't a medication, that isn't the usual, and I encourage you to get some support to do that. So while Jan was talking, I wanted to dig because there's just a couple of these things that I put all kinds of blue arrows around, and I wanted to make sure I at least said those here because they tie so well into what I've taught over the years. And this one is from the griefrecoverymethod.com group, and what they say here is, most importantly, they have all these other things. I've got things not to say to somebody who's grieving, things you could try to say to somebody who's grieving. But here it says, most importantly, recovery means acquiring the skills we should have been taught as a child and applying them in our life. These skills allow us to deal with the loss directly rather than shoving it in the closet and trying to pretend it's not there. This is not the only set of tools. This is one that's worked fabulously well for me over my life. Yes?
Do you have anything to say about, I think it might be called survivor guilt, feeling guilt that you're still alive and your loved one died, maybe younger than you.
Well, it's a so earlier in the talk with the church, I said all of my emotions are going to be created from my thoughts. You remember hearing that? I don't want you to believe that. Just try it out. So if I'm holding on to a set of thoughts that said the world would be better if my nephew Tommy had lived and I had died. If I keep thinking thoughts like that long enough, I'm going to have a lot of negative emotions. Some might call them guilt. Some might call them thoughts of guilt that generate sadness and depression and hurt. As far as I know, that's the only way to have those feelings, is to hold on to a false conclusion and pour enough energy into it that you start to believe it. And this process, the energy reduction techniques like EMDR, the trauma reduction techniques, the tapping process with the support of a therapist or a community of people, the reality management worksheet that we teach in our Tuesday group, another journaling process that Dr. Michael Rice teaches that we use in that Tuesday group called Mind Shifters. All of these are wonderful things to help me go inside my mind to figure out where is the thought that I have that I've poured so much energy into that I now believe it's a reality in my mind. One of the things they say about that in this work with the recovery method, grief recovery method, the G word, the guilt word. Talk to people about that word, that guilt. And we're talking about sharing it, being able to tell somebody, being able to tell them of your shameful thing, whether I can burst through it with tapping or not. So here's an example of a little dialogue between a griever and a grief recovery specialist. The griever says, "My son committed suicide. I feel so guilty." You can follow that with paragraphs of how I should have seen it, or I should have stopped him, or when he was five, I should have played with him more, or I should have divorced his mother who was abusive, or whatever. The grief recovery specialist says, "Did you ever do anything with intent to harm your son?" The griever usually responds, "No." The grief recovery specialist says, "Well, the dictionary definition of guilt implies intent to harm. And since you had no intent to harm, why don't you put the G word back in your dictionary? Are there some things that you wish had been different or better or more in that relationship?" asks the grief recovery specialist. And the person usually says, "Well, yes." And then you can help them talk about that. But guilt, bless his heart, Guy Finley, one of my favorite teachers, says, he practically comes out of his chair and he says, "Guilt is the absolute proof of a mind that's so divided against itself that it creates a situation that it doesn't like and then tries to prove to itself that it didn't create it by how much it doesn't like it." "God, I feel so guilty. Oh, I feel so bad about my guilt. Oh, I can't." "Hey, Tim, you did it to yourself." "What do you mean?" Guy Finley, gotta love him. "Guilt is the absolute proof of a mind that is so divided against itself that it creates something it doesn't like and then tries to prove to itself it didn't create it by how intensely it fights against and says it doesn't like what it just created." That's guilt. One more thing about the guilt before we go on.
Okay, I'll let you do that.
Thank you. 41 years of doing therapy, and a big chunk of that, I started as a probation officer, and then in my getting my doctorate, I did my internship at Rush Press St. Luke's, and they had one of the biggest inpatient and outpatient substance abuse programs. And so, I mean, I haven't struggled with addictions myself, but I have worked with people struggling with addictions. I have been in these rooms where people have these AA, NA, CA, CODA, etc. groups. And what I've learned from that is guilt is one of the primary drivers for relapse. guilt. Now, there are people who say, no, we need guilt or we wouldn't be able to live together. We'd be killing each other. The only way people live together in society is guilt, because blah, blah, blah. You know, if Tim goes over and punches Larry in the face, then we all shame Tim. That was bad, Tim. You shouldn't do that. And his guilt is the only thing that keeps him from punching Larry again. Well, I got news for you. That's not how I've observed it. That's not how the really intelligent people that I learned from and observing it with me observe it. Guilt in me is a pattern of thought that as I pour energy into it, my guilt feels painful. Does anybody here like their guilt feelings? They think it makes them feel happier or more joyful or more vibrant and creative? No. So, as I choose that, I have more negative internal experience. And when my negative internal experience builds up to the point where it seems intolerable, what do? I go to my drug of choice. Guilt feeds relapse in addictions. Guilt feeds depression. Guilt does not liberate. Guilt does not guide. Guilt does not free. Guilt does not heal. Just a suggestion to observe. Yes?
This isn't about guilt.
All right, we're now moving off the topic of guilt.
I feel guilty about taking this off the guilt.
Yes. Come to my Tuesday group. We'll give you a worksheet to do.
We need a sticker. The other thing I just want to share, because it's important for me, it helped me a lot. I had to go out to, I chose to go out to Washington to close down.
Breathing.
Our cabin out there, and all our personal things were still, dishes still in places, and well-meaning people that care deeply about me said, "Oh, that's good. You know, you'll bring closure." And every time I heard the word closure, I felt like something was stabbing me in the heart, and then I would start thinking, "Well, what's wrong with me? You know, I'm closure," and I could feel anger and all kinds of grief about that. So I went out to the cabin and I did what I had to do, and I went to the huge lodge they built right in front of the cabin, and I introduced myself to the woman who was taking reservations there. I don't know how she knew to say this to me, but I walked in, I introduced myself, and she just looked at me and she said, "Dorothy, my father was an honorary member of the Native people out there." And she said, "What I want to say to you is there is no closure. There's never closure. There's integration." And when she said that, I felt like a giant boulder was lifted off my heart. And she started talking about it. And then when I talked to her a little bit, I said, "Yes, you know, I people said I should come out here for closure, and I can't close anything, the door to anything." She said, "No, you're integrating." And it was one of the biggest gifts.
Yeah, and that's a fabulous word to use for how I felt when I turned around and realized there wasn't any closet anymore and all those memories were available for ready access in the library of my mind. They were integrated into my daily life. I didn't have to run from them anymore. And I've had a number of occasions since then where I'm with a group of people and I'm either talking about Pat or I'm talking about my father, and people, these are, you know, somewhat energy sensitive and therapy type people, and they say, "Wow, it's like the person's right here. It's integrated." Excellent word. My relationship with my father isn't going to end.
Closing is closing something out or closing the door.
Yeah, my relationship with my father just got better and more vibrant and more active because I was able to share his passions with my sons, my dad's grandsons, because they were still in grade school. One might have been in fourth grade and one might have been in fifth or fourth and third when my dad died. So he's gone, but they know a lot about their dad, their grandpa. And they can tell you stories about their grandpa, just like they can tell you stories about their great-grandmother. There's no closure there. There's integration. That's a wonderful word. Wonderful word. Anybody else? Questions, comments, answers, predicaments? Yes?
I have another one. In the, like a marriage relationship, how would you employ this technique of endings and new beginnings and stuff? Can you give examples of times that we as a couple might, you know, we're not intending to end our relationship.
Yes, but if you buy a new house, if you move out of an apartment, if he gets a new job or you get a new job, yes, it's going to change the dynamics. When I used to go to, primary work for me was an hour to an hour and a half commute one way. And when I changed that, it changed. It was almost like retiring. You know how sometimes couples say, I wish you'd go back to work, you know, because I had more time around the house. That was a transition. I did termination work on that. So anything like that, we get a new pet, a pet dies. We, you know, either one of us have a loss in our life. Well, that's going to change our relationship. And it doesn't have to be for the worse. Mm-hmm. But it's not never going to be the same. My relationship with my wife, she's my ex-wife now, never recovered from her losing her mother. She was not willing or able to apply any of my psychological skills and tools, and she just shut down and imploded. And she came out on the other side of it, convinced that she needed to change everything in her life, including her husband. Right? So if I'm in a marriage and I lose my best friend from college and we've been buddies the whole time, I better be willing to say to my spouse, things are different for me. Let me help, you know, help me process this. Understand, I may be away for 6 months or a year in a grief process, and when I come back, I may be different. Just being willing. It may be a lot better. Lots and lots of life transitions happen for the better. And in every one of them, unless I'm willing to look at how I'm going to change and integrate my life learnings, I lose stuff. I lose stuff. Guy Finley tells a story about the marine biologist who's got his daughter out on location with him, and she's about 12 years old, so it's okay. When she says, Daddy, I don't want to go out in the boat with you today. He says, okay, but stay where I can see you. And so, you know, she's all bright and happy, and she's so excited. And 3 or 4 days later, she's not going out with him, but she's not looking very happy. And he goes, so what's... I can't tell you, Daddy. Well, come on, tell me. So she takes him over into the shed where she's got a couple of these aquariums, and she's taken these starfish and these other little crabs and things and some seaweed, and she put them in the aquariums, and they're all dead. So they're all died, Daddy. And he says, yeah, of course they did. What do you mean, of course they did? Well, there's no circulation here. There's no flow. It's stagnant. Life needs flow, needs circulation, needs... I have to be willing to go through my stuff. I can't resist stuff and do anything but die. When I am willing, when I drop the resistance and I move into and through things, I can integrate them and I grow. Does that answer your question? Mm-hmm. I feel like I went a little bit off target, but...
Thank you.
Excellent questions. Questions, comments from anybody else? We're hitting about the 2-hour mark. Show of hands, who's ready to be done? Okay. Nice deep breath, please. I don't think I put my information on that handout sheet. Email is thayes, H-A-Y-E-S, @, C as in cat, H as in hat, the number 4, C as in cat, S as in sam.com. I'd be happy to entertain comments, questions, or send, electronic versions of this. And or if this, any part of this talk comes out, a link to the audio file that I'll put up on my website. Thank you all for being here. The church would be happy with any love offering, donation you might want to make. Should we pass the... Oh, there it is. And I, for one, appreciate your being here, because even if just a few of you apply this, our world gets a little bit better. Thank you so much.
Thank you.